This is K. Scott Allen of odeco.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
This is John. I'm at Webcamps London, and I'm talking to Saqib Shaikh. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually Saqib Shaikh, but okay. Close enough.
Okay. And so we were very happy to have your help here, and you're a member of the Bing team.
I am.
And also, you are you're an accessibility expert, and part of that is because you have limited sight, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, I am a developer of all things. I don't specialize in accessibility, but you can imagine it's a passion of mine to make sure that things are usable by me.
Do you want to start briefly by describing what you do on the Bing team?
Yeah, so I'm a developer and been at Microsoft for 4.5+ years, and I started off in Microsoft doing like consulting on all different .NET technologies. And for the past year, I've been in Bing working on some of the sort of middle tier stuff, looking at user behavior and seeing how we can present more useful information to the user. So that's been great fun.
So we were talking earlier today, and you were mentioning how you're working with deep links and the idea of when somebody searches on a term, you would also suggest some of the deeper links into the site that they would be likely to click on. Is that
correct? Yes, that's correct. The kind of thing we're looking at is, on aggregate, which queries and which links do people click on the most. So if you search for Amazon, most people end up going to Amazon, and we can really provide some rich information like a phone number to call and links to subsections like books and electronics within the site, thereby saving one click based on what users generally do.
Okay, so this is not something that a webmaster goes in and provides a bunch of information. This is something that's decided based on user past user actions then.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so that's got to be very, like your data mining at that point, there's got to be, that's a complex problem then.
It is. Everything we do is data mining, taking terabytes and terabytes of data and trying to spot trends amongst that.
Okay. So, it was interesting this morning. You worked at Webcamps, people form teams and work on projects. And so you very handily joined a team. You were able to find somebody using Twitter, and I just kind of was standing by you as you did that, and I was really impressed by how you were able to just kind of make these connections and figure out all these things without. I mean, I would have been, I would have felt self-conscious trying to go around and ask people about things, and you just very quickly put that together. So I was just wondering, what it's like what are some of the things you do in order to solve problems and develop, what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And it's interesting you brought it up that way, and I really like that because, I'm blind, and part of that is just finding solutions to problems and just going ahead and trying things like going to a conference, and it's actually a really hard environment, but at the same time, actually, you just get to meet people and you figure out whatever ways work, and Twitter's been really good for that because you can figure out where people are and what they're doing without having to look around the room. So that's cool.
So in that example, you kind of looked on Twitter, you saw that there was a team here that was already Twittering about something, and you connected with them and they told you what room they were in and you were...
Exactly, yeah. So just follow the Webcamps hashtag, and on day one, people were actually tweeting what they were learning about and so on and so forth. And today, people were tweeting about the projects and the groups they're in. So that's good.
Great. And so then you use a screen reader to access all that then, right?
Exactly, yes. So for people who might not know, a screen reader is a standard Windows application which sits in the background and uses various techniques to figure out what's happening, like new windows opening, menus being scrolled, and then announces that in a synthetic voice. And that's how I do all my work and use computer and everything.
Okay. Now, the one I've heard about before is JAWS. Is there a different one that you're using?
No, there are several, but JAWS is the one I use primarily.
Okay. And do you notice, I mean, this kind of ties over into the whole idea of accessibility, but do you notice some common, do you have some frustrations that you see on sites that block you from, you know, accessing the, or, you know, using them correctly using something like JAWS.
Yeah, so JAWS can actually cope quite well with most applications, most websites, but there are many things which make it either easier or harder. And these are the simple things which actually developers are really good at knowing about, like metadata and semantics. And these are things that as developers we do all the time. So you just got to think about the UI as being more than a little rectangle of color. Because, you know, we know that our HTML page is hierarchical and structured, and just things like putting the alt attribute on images is the basics, but people still don't do that. Even large companies don't.
Okay, and you know, one thing that's pointed this out to me lately is looking at something like the SEO toolkit that can be installed with IIS 7. And, you know, I guess there's probably like a good kind of tie-in between accessibility and SEO focus.
Yeah, there's a difference, but there's also a lot of similarity amongst that, especially like I said, structuring the data well and having the descriptions of images and so forth. And going forwards, I don't think we're there yet, but a lot of the applications are using AJAX, and there's this standard called ARIA, which is Accessible Rich Internet Applications. And this is the new standard for making JavaScript accessible. And if one day search engines are able to traverse AJAX-based applications, that's probably the way they'll be able to do it, in my opinion.
And do you see people using ARIA at all yet?
A few people are starting to use it. There are simple things you can do, like on a div, you can say this is the header and this is the main content and this is the footer. And you can start really simple. It's not this is accessible, this isn't. There's all small baby steps you can take.
And when you're talking about, you know, div header and div footer, that's clearly things that are solved better just in HTML5, where you have those elements are already defined, right?
That's true. But ARIA does a lot more as well, like coping with complex widgets like menus and rich edit areas, and it does all that as well. That was just a simple example.
Okay. Are there things that you... So structuring information and exposing it well, obviously there's some, you know, things that really break things, like if you focus too much visually, put things in images without alt tags and that sort of thing, you have blocked people.
Yeah, precisely. So I guess my recommendation would be to just learn the basics. And there are a small number of things which can go a long way. So whatever tool set you're using, like in a WPF application, there's UI automation. And if it's an HTML web app, then just the basics of labeling images. And if you learn these few rules, you can actually go a long way.
Is there something automated or, you know, a way to look at my site and see if I'm, like, similar to running an SEO, analysis? Is there a way to do kind of a, you know, accessibility analysis that's easy?
They're not foolproof, but there are lots and lots of tools, if you search, which will try to do this. And in fact, there's even one built into Visual Studio.
Oh, all right. So where's that found?
I can't remember, but I think you right-click on the web project and do check accessibility.
Okay. Embarrassing that I hadn't noticed that. Okay. So I've looked at just very basic, simple things that I was trying to do that bordered on accessibility problems with Visual Studio. So I was trying to use voice recognition to do coding. And I very quickly found out that wasn't very easy. And I'm just wondering how you're able to develop, you know, without full sight.
So I don't use voice recognition myself because a lot of what I'm doing is using the keyboard. I don't use the mouse at all. So in addition to typing on the keyboard, I'm using all the shortcuts and, you know, tabbing around using the arrow keys. But coming back to the voice recognition question, that's again about the APIs. The voice recognition will interrogate the APIs to say, what menu items are there? What buttons are there that I can click? So I'm not sure about the particular problem, but that's the kind of issues it may have had.
And so when you're developing, you need to keep, like, I get confused in Lost. I rely on IntelliSense. I get confused in Lost navigating around, you know, a rather simple class because I'm focusing on one area. And so are you needing to just memorize a lot, or how do you navigate and you know, keep that model of the code.
So a lot of it is navigating the way anyone else would, reading through the code, using the go-to definition and things like that. But you're right, a lot of it is keeping the structure of the source code in my head, knowing what classes there are, what assemblies, what methods within each class, and just having that hierarchy in my head so that I know where to look. And just a little funny anecdote. Recently, I've been reading some code I'm unfamiliar with, and the person is from a, I call it the Pascal school of coding, where you have your main method at the bottom and the most specific things at the top, because that's the way things had to be way back when. And like, that is just impossible for me to read, because you have to always be reading backwards, if that makes sense.
Right, right. So when you start looking at a new project, you know, or sample or something like that, do you just look for, you know, the entry point and just kind of work your way through? I mean,
exactly.
Okay.
It's really, yeah, where's the entry point, and get a high level overview there, and then go and have a look at each method and see what that does in turn and build the picture up.
Okay. And for, do you use, is there a specific screen reader that you use in Visual Studio then?
I use JAWS as well. And some people have written a plugin for JAWS, a set of scripts to make it work a little bit better. So it does read IntelliSense, for example.
Oh, good. Okay. One other thing, just, you know, someone else, Clint from Startup Weekend, he said he was walking by as you were working, and he noticed that you had your screen reader speed just cranked way up. And it's, I guess it's just something that you've developed, that like the same way people develop the skill of typing very quickly, you're able to listen at a speed that most people couldn't keep up with.
Exactly. It's just a case of being more efficient and being able to listen to it faster. And in fact, when I was in high school, I had this thing, I guess it's one of these things that teenagers do, you know, who can hear the computer the fastest? So I remember over the years, I sort of put it up one notch every few months.
So a long time ago, I was in the Navy, and we did a lot of, we would run fire drills over sound-powered telephones, and there would be all kinds of ruckus going on. It was really loud. There were people yelling for things over these sound-powered telephones, and to any normal person listening, it was just all muffled. It was nonsense. But because we knew that there were a certain number, you know, maybe 10 different commands that would be given, and we knew what was going to happen next based on what was going on with the fire, you were just waiting. You were trying to decide between two or three things that somebody was going to be saying. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, you know, I'm guessing it's probably similar, that code has a structure, there are certain keywords, and so you're able to listen at a higher rate than you would be able to a normal English.
Yeah, very much so, especially when it's just reading dialog boxes and menus. You know what those menus are going to say. They're the same all the time. And even with code, like you say, there's a limited number of keywords, etc. But when I go to read a tutorial, for example, I may slow it down because you have to be thinking a lot more about what you're hearing.
Okay. You know, one thing you were talking about with the whole idea of that a lot of user interfaces and Visual Studio more and more is moving towards a, you know, mouse driven. There are a lot of context menus and that kind of thing. I guess that's not as frustrating if you're able to navigate those and if they expose things in a way that JAWS can read them for you.
Exactly. As long as they can be accessed through the keyboard and there's an API for accessing them, then that's okay. Like, I had this Silverlight demo once of a map of the world with no text on it, and you could still cursor through it as a list box and use the keyboard, and it would announce the countries even though there was no text because it had the metadata behind the scenes.
Ah, okay.
And so in a similar way in Visual Studio, they can make things really fancy, but as long as there's the API exposing it, it's okay.
And is that's probably something a lot of developers take for granted, but that is something that's a focus at Microsoft, right? That's something that generally you see in a lot of Microsoft products, that those things are looked at?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that we have internal standards which product groups have to meet, and more I think we're getting better at that now.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to talk about as we finish?
I think one of the last things is just, I have this term that I love, which is universal design. And it's not that I dislike the word accessibility, it's a word everybody knows. But to me, universal design is about much more. It's not only about software, it's about everything in life. And I have this idea that when you make something, you know, you're a creator, you're a craftsman, you want to make things for the largest number of people to use and to be happy with. And that's what anyone makes wants when they're making their new web app, their new shiny toy. But just remember that there are a lot of different people in the world with different requirements who do things in different ways, think in different ways, use their computer in different ways. And I think a lot of people get put off by accessibility because it's a burden, or scared by a disability like blindness because it's unknown. But it's just keeping in mind whenever you develop that, actually, there's a lot of people in this world and they're all a little bit different.
Great. So in a way, it's just another form of localization, really.
Really. It's just making cool stuff for lots of people.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks a lot for your time.